This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three-man front.
UAB, they had a scrimmage on Saturday, Legion Field, and people who were there, they got to see it. Reports are the defense really won the day. A couple of guys that really showed out for UAB. You had Richard Rebels. Apparently, he had an interception. Jordan Smith, if you've never seen this guy, ran into some issues when he was at Florida. Originally went and played there. Went to community college, but he came back. Guys, he's 6'7", 230 pounds. And
that's pretty skinny for a football player.
As a defensive end, but he's all muscle. And to the people that were there, if they had not blown the whistle and they had kept it live, he would have had multiple sacks on Saturday. So that's good news for Bill Clark's defense, because we talked a lot about the offensive side of the ball.
Now, Cole, I know you played inside, but I would imagine, other than disrupting, you know, passing lanes with his length, wouldn't an offensive tackle like a 6'7 guy, wouldn't it make it easier to get leverage on him?
I don't know. If you watch Marcus Davenport in that preseason game yesterday, he was giving the Chargers tackles fits. Sometimes,
but he wasn't 230.
Sometimes if those guys understand leverage, I mean, it goes back to the Raekwon Davis discussion that we had when he began to play for Alabama. He stay low. Could he keep his pad level low? And some guys have. It really comes down to flexibility, Aaron. If you understand how to win leverage, how to keep your pad level low, and if you're flexible enough to be consistently do that, then your length can become a big advantage, because you can keep guys from getting their hands on you. If you can't get your hands on somebody, you're blocked. So, yeah, it can work both ways. But if you're flexible, especially if you can bend and have speed off the edge, and then you can turn that speed into power and give an inside swim move, or turn that into a bull rush, all of a sudden you can become very effective.
He's the guy that immediately just catches your eye when you're there at practice.
We saw him at practice.
Athletic was he the one that blocked the field goal last year?
Jordan Smith?
It was one of those 6'7 guys that blocked that key field goal for them last year. I can't remember off the top of my head.
He's super athletic. And I gave you that, but I haven't looked at his current weight, so he might have put on some pounds. He's a big dude. He's an athletic dude, and he's going to be an asset.
He's going to have some length, right?
Yeah.
6'7.
Yeah, for sure.
No, there were like three guys in practice when we were there on that Friday. He was the first one that stuck out to me. I asked Bill Clark about him, so he just kind of laughed and was like, yeah, he's a guy that's going to help us be, you know, give some problems up front and be able to give a problem off the edge. He was 22 was one of the first numbers that stuck out to me when we were there at practice.
You also had some other guys that we'll talk about that stood out there in practice, and a couple on the offensive side of the ball, as well as Myron Mitchell continues to stand out there at wide receiver. And of course, we know about Austin Watkins. Alabama with a practice on Saturday, and after two scrimmages, Aaron, Nick Saban continues to be asked, and with good reason, about the linebacker position because of the lack of depth.
Yep.
And the injuries that have occurred. But on Saturday, he threw out one freshman that's really turning heads and has been consistent in camp there at the linebacker position.
When we've had guys like this in the past, whether it was C.J. Mosley playing, was a freshman, Hightower playing, was a freshman, Rolando McLean playing, was a freshman, we just put them in there and play them. And they got to get some on-the-job training. And there's still competition at that position, but you know, he's a guy that has made plays throughout fall camp so far that we're hopeful we'll be able to continue to improve and develop and play like a starter.
Guys, that was huge for me when I heard him say that. Now, Nick Saban loathes comparisons, and I don't think he's comparing Christian Harris to C.J. Mosley or Dante Hightower or Rolando McLean. I think he's comparing the position they're in right now to situations that necessitated C.J. Mosley playing and Dante Hightower playing and Rolando McLean. Now, some of those guys contributed to that during their years because they were good enough. They were that good. That's where Christian Harris has put himself. Now, partly that's because they've just been decimated. You know, that Mac Wilson didn't come back. Josh McMillan gets hurt. They've had some, issues at that position, but the fact that he's, for me, I don't know how you guys heard that. For me, he set the stage where it sounds like Christian Harris is going to be the guy. Now, he said there's still competition, but he said Christian Harris has made plays through fall camp, and we're hopeful he continues to improve so he can play like a starter. I think Nick Saban's, unless something goes really awry for Christian Harris this week and into the third scrimmage, I think Christian Harris is going to be your inside linebacker.
This is a guy that they were so excited about getting, when you look at this last year's recruiting class, a kid out of Baton Rouge, went to University Lab. I can remember us talking about him on the show and recruiting insiders saying, watch out for this guy. This guy could make an early impact. And it just goes back to the pipeline that Alabama has had for several years now under Nick Saban to the state of Louisiana. Just think about how many great players have come out of that state and had impacts on this program.
I want to say that Tim Williams went to the same high school. I mean, they've had some success in Louisiana, and particularly Baton Rouge. Heck, Dylan Moses from that area. So, you know, we had Rodney Orr on this show, and Rodney has been telling and saying this for a while, that Christian Harris is the most athletic guy they have there of the candidates that they're choosing from. And so it may just be a position, Cole, where he's made so many plays in fall camp, and he's so much more athletic than, let's say, a Markell Benton, that they may just have to learn to live with some of the mistakes that you're going to have when you play a true freshman.
You're going to go inexperienced anyway, right? I mean, some of the guys that are going to play linebacker at Alabama this year are not going to have a lot of experience, so why not go with the guy with the higher ceiling, but the guy who at least plays the game that you want him to play it? And from the accounts that I got from Saturday was that he was all over the place.
Yeah.
And the physicality is definitely there. The attitude, the demeanor is there. Plays the game that you want to see, the way a linebacker play the game. So some of those things that may not necessarily be coachable, finishing plays, playing through the whistle, attitude, demeanor, how tough and physical you are. If you get those things with a guy who has less experience than somebody else, but you think you can coach him up to, by the end of the season, be a better player, I think that's who you go with. I think that's the direction that you try to go.
There's always one phrase that Nick Saban has, and this I've noticed it the last couple of years, but if he says this about a guy, I automatically write this guy's name down. At some point, I'm going to come back to him. He says, anytime he talks about a guy that Nick Saban really likes, he says it means a lot to him. Football means a lot to him, which tells me this guy is doing the stuff off the field. He's in the playbook. He's asking questions of the older guys. He's doing everything he's being told to do because it's important for him to be a good football player. Nick Saban said that about Christian.
And even, Aaron, if it's by necessity that he's got to play this year, think about it. Dylan Moses is gone next year.
Probably.
You're going to have a lot of inexperience if those guys aren't in the rotation this year coming in. So if you get a guy that's a freshman that can come in and play a year of college football at a high, high level, you're ahead of the curve. DJ Dale, they're in the middle.
Yeah.
If he's able to come in and be the starter and play through 15 games this season, you're ahead. Some of those other guys that aren't even being mentioned right now, you're going to need that for next season.
You definitely are, because you bring up a good point. I mean, if Dylan Moses has the year that most expect him to with his athleticism, he probably does go to the NFL next year.
AP Top 25 is out. Clemson is number one. No surprise there. Alabama comes in at number two. Oregon almost sneaks in the top 10. They come in at number 11. Texas A&M is at number 12. Auburn at 16. Central Florida at 17. But Nebraska, from 4-8 a year ago, they come in at number 24, followed by Stanford to round out the top 25. Any takeaways? Because on the top 10.
Other than Nebraska went 4-8 last year,
yeah,
and they're in the top 25.
Keep throwing that out there. And I agree. But it's wide open. Look at the rest of the West. You have Northwestern. You got Hunter Johnson, who's a transfer quarterback from Clemson. We don't know what that's going to look like. That a lot of attrition. You got a lot of young guys in Fitzgerald's offense. Wisconsin was down last year. They were an 8-5 team. They are in the top 25. How much better is Purdue going to be? How much better is PJ Fleck in Minnesota going to be?
I think they're going to be. I think the middle of that conference is going to be really good. That's why I'm leaning on not having a team from the Big Ten make the college football playoff this year.
This cannibalism?
I think they eat each other up. I think when you talk about Iowa, Minnesota, I do think Nebraska is going to be a better football team. Purdue is going to be a pretty good football team. I think Michigan State is not getting enough discussion right now. They're going to be a good football team. Penn State's not completely going away, and Maryland should improve. So I think the middle of the Big Ten is going to be much better than people anticipate. And that's going to make it much difficult for a team from that conference to advance to the playoffs.
What about, Aaron, Iowa State? This is a team that people will forget, or actually in November, they were in the thick of it when it came to the Big 12 last year. And Brock Purdy, he's coming back. Is it Iowa State? Can they take that jump? Can they, you know, maybe battle to be in that championship
jump
game?
Jump where?
To be playing in the conference championship game, whether it's not Texas and Oklahoma in a rematch.
We've ran through some scenarios where if Texas isn't the best team, the second best team that we think in the Big 12, it's always Iowa State that comes in. So, yeah, they could absolutely get themselves back into that position. I don't think it's going to happen, but that's where that league is right now, that we view Iowa State as having a chance to be better than Texas.
Well, one of the biggest takeaways that I have from the AP Top 25 is there's only three teams from the Big 12 that are in this poll. And we think it's going to be that much better this season.
Well, there's only two teams from the ACC.
Which is, I wouldn't expect. I was surprised that Syracuse got in there in the top 25. I know they went 10-3 last year.
So there's seven from the Big Ten, six from the SEC.
Yep.
Five from the Pac-12.
Five from the Pac-12. So are you telling me that you believe that the Pac-12 is the third most powerful?
I'm surprised Washington State's that
of the Power Five.
I think a lot of that's just belief.
They were 11-2.
But their quarterback's gone.
But Mike Leach, do you really question whether he can plug a guy in there with that offense and win 9 games, 10 games?
Yeah,
I don't.
I consistently I do.
He took Gardner Minshew, a guy that
I get it, but Gardner Minshew didn't do that by himself.
No, they had players around him, but with that system, I would trust Mike Leach and just that style of offense that he runs, that I could see them. They're going to be in the top 25 by the end of the season. There's some other teams in here that I don't believe will be in the top 25 by the end of the season.
Going back to your question, I would have Big 12 third, Pac-12 fourth, ACC fifth if I'm ranking conferences. I'd go SEC one, Big 10 two, Big 12, Pac-12, ACC. That would be my top five if I'm ranking the Power Five conferences.
So the other teams from the Big 12 that aren't listed here, TCU, they got 57 first place votes.
Has a chance. Baylor will be in the top 25.
Baylor, West Virginia, I think they're going to be a little bit down this year. Neil Brown had a lot of turnover on that roster. Another team that maybe sneaks in, Kansas State. Still a rebuild for Klieman.
I have no idea what to expect from Kansas State this year. I don't think they fall off the map, but that's going to be a different style offense. That was an RPO-heavy, read-heavy offense last year. It'll be more pro-style this year. They're going to be more ground and pound. They're going to try to run right at people a little bit more. So I don't know if they have the bodies to necessarily be what they want to be offensively, but I do think Chris Klieman's a good coach, and I do think the culture is close enough there in Manhattan for them to not take a big dip this season.
I was surprised that Virginia only got 44 votes. They're not getting a whole lot of love, and maybe
because the media picked them to win their division at ACC Media Days. So for them to not have more love was a little bit surprising to me.
Especially with a talented starting quarterback coming back, some of the weapons he has on the offensive side of the ball, not to mention a guy that's probably going to go in the first round of the NFL draft next year there at cornerback. Remains to be seen. They're not in there. Some other surprises from the top 25. Texas A&M, do you have them at number 12? Do you think they'll be number 12?
No.
Come season's end.
No.
Do you think they're in the top 25? In the top 20?
Here's the thing. How many would they have to win to be 12? Eight?
Eight would be the minimum.
I mean, they get nine. They're good chance they're in the top 12.
So that schedule, they deserve to be in there.
If they get nine against that schedule, they deserve to be top 10.
Mark called in and he asked, he said, well, why can't we think more conventional, or why can't we be a little bit more progressive in our thinking, and why can't Auburn have two quarterbacks or play two quarterbacks? You can go back to when it has been successful, but you also have to look at the role that each quarterback played. You could go back to Florida with Chris Leak and Tim Tebow. But Tim Tebow, he came in special situations. He wasn't that guy. It's not like you were rotating them evenly. I can remember when Steve Spurrier did it, back when it was Terry Dean and Danny Werfel, and that rotation and how it went. One guy usually emerges, and quarterbacks will tell you it's just the consistency of not only not looking over your shoulder, knowing you could get pulled at any situation.
You want your quarterback to have a feel.
Right.
And quarterbacks can get into a rhythm, and you want your quarterback to be able to identify things that are happening over the course of a game, over the course of a season, and that allows them to make better decisions. Is it possible to play two? I'll say this, regardless of who if Bo Nix is named the starter this week, or if Joey Gay would play is named the starter this week, both of those guys are going to play week one against Oregon. They will both take a snap in that game against Oregon. Now, how that'll be managed, how that'll be work, I don't really know exactly what the situation will be for both of those guys, but I do think both quarterbacks play week one, and I think probably play the first three games of the season. And if it's a situation that works and Gatewood ends up being, let's say, your short yardage quarterback, similar to that Tebow package that you mentioned his freshman year under Urban Meyer at Florida, maybe that can go the entire season. And he can be a guy that helps you in different situations, and he can be a short yardage red zone guy because he has different size and his skill set helps you in a little bit of a different way. Is it true balance at quarterback, as in like rotating every other series or rotating every two series? I mean, that's where you remove the feel, the rhythm, the continuity that comes with everybody that you talk. What did Barry Odom say to us at SEC Media Days? He said, I brought Kelly Bryant because of what that position means to my football team. Kelly Bryant is here because I need my quarterback to be that guy. And I mean my team to know it. I want my team to know it. You heard a clip from Gus Malzahn from when I talked to him on Thursday, Friday on the show. He said, it's important to me that my team know who that guy is. You hear so many different quarterbacks. Nick Saban has referenced the quarterback has to win the team. The team essentially chooses who the quarterback will be because it means that much for them to take that leadership role. That, to me, is why it makes it difficult to just say, we're going to play two, we're going to go every other series, we're going to go every three series, every two series. For one guy to have a role because you bring different skills, yeah, that's possible, that's cool, that's good. And go back to Damian Craig at Auburn, he did it. He was a short yardage red zone guy under Terry Bowden. I mean, you saw it there. You saw Blake Bell do it for Oklahoma. I mean,
Pat Nix was the starter that year, right? Pounds.
Yeah. I mean, it's been done in different situations over time. And then you can throw into the whole Wildcat scenarios and how that has sort of changed the different situational football, the guy that's taking the snap. But to just truly say we're playing two quarterbacks, we haven't seen that. I don't know if we've ever seen that work. Have we ever just seen two legit quarterbacks split time?
No, and we saw it when I mentioned Terry Dean and Danny Werfel there under Steve Spurrier, Aaron. It was because he wasn't pleased with either one of them. He was like, I'm gonna split time because neither one of you have won the job. One of you has to outperform the other. That's when that came up. I don't think that we have ever seen it unless it was like a special role because you're only going to get so many plays, offensive snaps. What was Auburn's goal a few years ago with a hurry up? Like 70? They wanted to get 70. That was their goal, get 70 offensive snaps. And to think that you're going to split those 35-35, you might only get 60 in the game versus Oregon.
Yeah, you don't play two quarterbacks just to play them. And one thing that's obvious in talking to enough guys behind the scenes in these sort of quarterback competitions is you can mislead fans who aren't seeing it every day. You can't mislead guys on the team. They know who that guy is. Now, if it's super close and you start having a dynamic in the locker room where people are taking sides, that's a bad issue. That means it's really close. And you're going to have guys who, well, this is my friend. I want him to play. But by and large, those 85 guys, they know who the guy is. They see out the guy that's making plays against the defense and all that. So you can mislead the fans. You can mislead the media. But you can't mislead the guys in your locker room. If you're playing a less talented player, it's eventually going to be an issue in that locker room.
Well, Mark brought up the comparison to basketball. He said you can play two guys at the point guard. Well, basketball is a lot different. You're going up and down the floor a lot of times at a fast pace. And it's much different. So last year, let's just take Jared Harper.
What do we say about today's basketball, though?
Yeah.
That it's almost becoming positionless.
Right.
I mean, that's the direction that basketball is going. You can't say that about quarterback.
But Jared Harper, he would bring the ball up. But at times, man, he needed rest because he's having to play defense, too. It's a little bit different. So they bring in, what, Javon McCormick. And he would spell
Bryce
in for five,
Brown
six
bring
minutes.
The ball off the floor? Yeah, I mean, not every time, but he could do it. So that's, I don't know how
the two aren't comparable.
That is, yeah, no.
This whole Antonio Brown, the back and forth, seemed like they had moved on from the whole helmet situation, guys. He's on the sideline. He and Gruden are being animated during the preseason game the other night. Seems like all is well. We're going to move on. And now he's going back to the whole helmet thing. And he decides he's not going to practice yesterday.
Well, he thought he got one that was going to work, and the NFL tests it and turns it down. So you just kind of wonder where you go next from here. And obviously, listen, the Raiders are in a bit of a tough spot. They want Antonio Brown to play football this year. They know that on the field he can make them a better team. But how much are you willing to put up with? And we've seen guys miss camp before and come back and play well and have good seasons. So I don't know if the missing of camp is really the biggest takeaway here. The biggest takeaway is, what if he doesn't get this helmet thing figured out in the next 8-10 days? Then what are you going to do? Is he going to miss a game because he can't get the kind of helmet that he wants? I personally don't think so. And I think it's easy for us to sit here as fans and say, dude, just go get the new helmet and put it on and go play. Like, what are you doing? What's happening here? It's a helmet, and it's actually one that's going to be better for you. It's more safe for you. You're making a lot of money to play a game that you say you love, but you also said in the offseason you didn't need. So I don't really know where he is. I can't, but this, I mean, this, that's why I thought the Raiders were going to be so interesting for Hard Knocks. It's not just him. I mean, they got Arden Key on that defense. They got Vontaze Burfict on that defense. The amount of characters on this team is pretty unbelievable. And by the way, you got a dude that was sitting in the booth for Monday Night Football 2 years ago, running the show, and a guy that was on the NFL Network pulling the strings behind the scenes a year and a half ago. So from top to bottom, this organization is overly intriguing, but this Antonio Brown situation just continues to be more and more of a head scratcher. I still kind of don't think this is going to impact him for the actual season. I don't think it's going to cost him games, but can you imagine being a player in that camp every single day? It's something else. And you just go back and think about, whether it was Le'Veon or whether it was AB or whoever it was, if you guys remember towards the end of camp and towards the end of last year, a lot of those Steelers players, it kind of started getting to the point of, hey, man, we're done. We're finished. We're not talking about it. Don't want to deal with it. That's it. It's over. You know, and it started with Le'Veon this time last year when Pouncey and that offensive line came out and said, hey, man, we just want to do this. Going to play. If he ain't playing, get him out of here. We're done. We're playing the season. We're finished. It's over. And then obviously with AB through the course of the year, you kind of heard more and more whispers coming out of that locker room of, yeah, man, this thing's just not, it's not what it needs to be. You can imagine every single day, this is, Josh Jacobs scores 2 touchdowns in a scrimmage. He's getting asked about this. Carr throws 3 touchdowns in a scrimmage. He's getting asked about this. You can see Mayock's frustration when he gives a statement. You don't think Gruden's getting asked about this at every turn? So, yeah, it's an absolute distraction, and I still don't think it affects his actual playing time, but you just kind of wonder, if we get another week into this and the helmet thing's not figured out, what's he actually going to do?
Well, Aaron, there's no doubt. They need him. They need, but they don't need this. This team doesn't need this, this circus that's going on off the field. It's another distraction.
It is. It is, but didn't they know that when they traded for him?
Yeah.
They got rid of a receiver who went about his business pretty quietly, and they traded for a distraction. This is what they signed up for.
Well, I also, though, you can't tell me that John Gruden probably either publicly or privately said, I can get a handle on this guy. Listen, I know how to talk to this guy.
John Gruden has been the head coach of my franchise, and I've seen this act before. He basically had issues with Keyshawn Johnson, who quit the team. He had a kickoff team. He had issues with Keenan McCardell. He had issues in trying to re-sign Derek Brooks, of all people. John Gruden is the girl and guy from your high school that was always involved in the drama, and they just needed it, like oxygen to function. That's John Gruden. Look at everywhere he's been. That's why I never bought into the college thing. He's walking dysfunction. He's never happy with his roster. He's always wanted to upgrade. He's always calling out a player. He gets involved in the business end when he should allow his general manager to do all that stuff. But Antonio Brown's a phenomenal player. But he is a constant distraction and has been since last year with the Steelers. This is the player that you traded for. This isn't brand new.
How happy is Mike Tomlin that he's not having to deal with us this season?
I think most guys in that locker room are probably happy that this is not their issue.
No, we had Le'Veon. He's gone, and Antonio is great of a player. He was a pain in my butt at times. I am so glad that they're dealing with this.
Well, and hopefully James Washington can be a third of what AB was. And, I mean, it looks like Pittsburgh's going to have a pretty good team. But,
looking at a true Steelers, looking at a true Steelers fan.
That dude could play.
He's about to start crying as he's saying it.
I mean, at the end of the day, did he produce? Yes. Just get him on the field. Find the helmet. Why are the Raiders not trying to find a helmet? Like, why is Antonio Brown having to go to Twitter and to eBay to find a helmet? If you're Mike Mayock, would you not hire a team of people to be scrounging the football earth to find as many of these helmets that the NFL might be able to test and be eligible for game use? Bring them all. Give them all. Season tickets. New on-field passes for the new stadium in Vegas. We'll put you up at the Palms. Whatever that damn sweet Darren Revelle's tweeting out for $100,000 a night. We'll set you up. Get this guy on my field now. How can you not figure it out?
Maybe if James Washington can catch 20 balls this year and maybe score a touchdown. Sounded so defeated. They'll be okay. They'll make the playoffs. They'll finish second in the division.
Behind who? Do you feel the same way about the Browns as you do the Nebraska? Tell me you do.
No.
Tell me you're buying the Browns as much as you're buying Nebraska.
No, please. I think the Browns, I mean, they'll be flirting with the playoffs. I'm not ready to pick them to win the division like everybody else.
You don't think the Ravens are winning the division, do you?
Oh, Lamar Jackson, you're too, man.
Stop.
Mark Ingram, come on.
Guys, a little breaking news on the program.
Break it.
Jalen Hurts. Shockingly named the starter for Oklahoma.
It was such a neck and neck
Oklahoma
race.
Oklahoma football
the past
just
3 weeks.
Tweeted that out. Lincoln Riley names Jalen Hurts as the starter.
Here's some more breaking news.
Oh?
Justin Fields. Named the starting quarterback at Ohio State. I don't know if I can say the Ohio State University yet, because that's all going through the process.
You have an interesting smile on your face while saying that. Are you two back?
I'm excited to see him play. We've never seen him start a game. So, here's to you, Justin Fields.
I'm happy for Jalen that he was able to navigate that quarterback battle there in Lincoln. Find a way to have a better chart over the last 2 weeks of fall practice and squeak out that quarterback win.
We're getting close.
And tip of the hat to Spencer Rattler, who gave him all he
wanted. Pushed him till, 8 days before the game?
Three-man front. Weekdays 10 till 2 on Jocks 94.5, jocksfm.com, and the Jocks mobile app.